So the basic issue is, how do we count gay, lesbian, and bisexual people? It's kind of the big framing issue, and obviously something that people who've been involved in the field understand as a challenge. This is actually a map from the UK where they attempted to identify LGBT people, LGB people primarily. And how do you ask the question? Not that question, that's a hard question to ask, but we're talking about a much more simple question. So how do you ask questions on surveys to identify gay, lesbian, and bisexual respondents? this is framed as, why do we need to know this information? What do we ask? How do we ask it? And some special considerations. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. But I want to say that in many ways, the research that we've done, this is the document called Best Practices, the resulting document for asking questions about sexual orientation on surveys. If you Google the Williams Institute at UCLA, you can download this for free. And the broad intent of this document, if I can presume to say this, and I do want to say, this was done in collaboration with wonderful folks, and I feel privileged to give this, but I know many people could say a lot more about the purpose and the intents behind this. But it was really to create a scholarly document that could help support the addition of questions on sexual orientation to surveys, with a special focus on government surveys. And anyone who's tried to do this know one of the first things you get are sort of questions back about, are there validated questions? Is this going to kill our survey? And so the attempt was to really frame what's been known for the public and for the community of people who develop these surveys, so such that advocates for adding these questions have a useful tool to support and respond to all of those arguments. So I think it's important to frame that in terms of understanding why this is really kind of a broad-based general overview that is backed by substantial bodies of research. It was funded by the Ford Foundation. The panels were really, I'm not sure, and Susan may flesh this out. Randy Sell did a lot of the original legwork on it. Lee Badgett, who's at the Williams Institute, but based mostly in Massachusetts, really took the helm during the process. And we have, a list of co-authors in the documents, including many great people, but I'm just not going to run through it right now. The meetings were convened over a five-year period from 2003 to 2008. We also had the opportunity to meet with additional researchers and administrators from statistical agencies, such as the National Center for Health Statistics. And we also were able, the grant was sizable enough to do kind of mini grants to sponsor some original research as part of it to answer some critical questions. And obviously we reviewed existing and emerging research data. Why ask? This may be preaching to the converted, but because we're often being asked to respond to that, these data are not available. To the extent that they are available now, we're identifying meaningful disparities. So when they're not collecting that information is lost. If you don't know whether smoking rates among your LGB population are fueling your overall tobacco usage rates, unless you ask that question and have that information. What's measured matters. So we all know that. If we don't have these measurements, we don't exist, we're not on the radar screen, and so we need to have that information. And again, it can be done, and that's part of the intent in this document, without sacrificing data integrity or response rates. What to ask? So there are three areas of questions that the group focused on, and that, again, people somewhat familiar with asking questions have organized questions into. And I'm going to go through them sequentially rather than list them all. So the first is around self-identification. How does one identify one's orientation? And the recommended question was, do you consider yourself to be heterosexual or straight, gay or lesbian, or bisexual? The second is around sexual behavior, the sex of your sex partners. And that question that's recommended is, in the past time period, for example, year, but that can be adjusted to meet the needs of your whatever the survey parameters are or research parameters are, who have you had sex with? Men only, women only, both men and women, I have not had sex. And then sexual attraction, the sex or gender of individuals that someone feels attracted to. And the single question that the group recommends is, people are different in their sexual attraction to other people. Which best describes your feelings? Are you only attracted to females, mostly attracted to females, equally, mostly to males, only attracted, not sure? This can also be asked as two questions. Are you attracted to men? Yes, no. Are you attracted to women? Yes, no. And that's also added in the document. And then, you know, we spend a lot of time on the how. And again, recommend self-administered when possible to increase privacy. Sometimes there are surveys that are interviewer in-person administered, and there may be an opportunity to create a module that's self-administered within that context. Anything that can basically increase the privacy of the setting in which the question is answered, whether that's, you know, barriers if people are in a classroom, whether that's reinforcing through interviewer language or written language about the confidential or anonymous nature of the survey, those will help improve responses. And again, when there are interviewers involved, training to explain the reason for the question, and sometimes the response categories can be helpful. And again, giving them the interviewers training and simple definitions to provide to people can help address any concerns that are raised in asking these questions, particularly in settings or communities where maybe it seems like it's being done for the first time. Probably isn't, but sometimes it feels that way. And again, placement of questions can vary. We recommend having identity at the end of a demographic section, and same-sex sexual behavior and attraction as part of any section on HIV, sexual health, or reproductive behavior. And then in surveys with self-administered section for sensitive topics, maybe those are, you know, that may be whether those are substance abuse or domestic violence or things like that, you may want to be adding in these questions as well, particularly if that's, again, sort of an isolated way of being administered in the middle of a larger survey. Special considerations. And I'm checking my own time since I'm the moderator. I'm going to go quickly. Recognize transgender as an umbrella term. The group was not charged with looking at transgender, but we didn't want to omit it, and so it is included. There's less information about that, and we were able to do some original research in this area as well as kind of monitor what's happening in an evolving field. Carrie Conran found in some of her original research challenges with heterosexual youth not knowing the difference between sex and gender, which is one of the ways that we help measure transgender status. Scout has developed an interesting question that combines transgender identity and the sexual orientation categories that I showed in the earlier slide, and there's a citation for that in the report that I can give you if you want to look at that. And again, gender nonconformity is a broader measure in the same way that asking questions about attraction is a much broader measure than questions about orientation or same-sex sexual behavior. Younger or older, lack of experience for younger people will limit how the gender of sexual partners aligns with sexual identity. So I'm just pulling out a couple of really quick highlights here. And stigma around gay identity for youth may limit how many younger people select sexual minority identity. And also for youth, very important, and maybe in general as well, to avoid placement of questions around sexual identity near questions around sexual abuse, as it may sort of stimulate feelings and reactions that may limit people's willingness to respond to the question. Very little information is available, population-based data in particular, about how older people respond to sexual orientation questions. It's an area ripe for research, particularly as we see high rates of HIV and prevalence of HIV in people 50 and over. And I know we're doing some work in Massachusetts now to extend the questions around sexual identity on our BRFS. It's now, the top age limits have now been pulled off. But, you know, for instance, CDC counseling and testing guidelines still stop, for HIV, still stop at 64. So we need to sort of push those parameters further with some research. Racial and ethnic culture, there's a growing body of research of how people in racial and ethnic minority groups do or don't respond to these questions. There's sort of a heterogeneity of experience in the research that's been done, particularly by Che and Ayala and the Latino and Asian American communities. One thing to think about is considering adding response options such as two-spirit, same-gender loving, down low, or queer, and also looking at sampling frames and sampling methods that will reduce underrepresentation of racial and ethnic groups. So looking at venue-based sampling and respondent-driven sampling may improve rates among sexual orientation minorities of color. And again, understanding factors that may mediate the choice of identity categories is important, particularly discrimination and acculturalization. Obviously, the greater the level of acculturalization of a minority group, the easier it is to use the questions that have already been suggested. I have nothing to disclose, no relationships to disclose. So questions and comments. I'll take one question and then move on just to keep us on time, one or two.
Sure. I'm Bobby Feathers from the Center for Tobacco Policy Research. In response to kind of how do older folks answer this demographic question for Missouri, in Missouri we asked it in our county level study, and we had a lot of people answer don't know, and more don't knows than LGBT. And so I look at the average age, and the average age of that group is 70. So wow. Apparently they don't know how to answer the question. So at least in Missouri, that's what we.
Great. Okay, thank you.